something went on here, something went on there. And
this time on TNT.
What in the SN hell is going on NBC on Saturday nights?
What's Jonathan doing with Tom Cruise's mom, a massive head wound, and some penguins?
And inspired by Jim Carrey's recent turn on SNL, we play a brand new game called Carrey, Not Carrey. Coming up right now on TNT.
Good morning, Jonathan Torrens.
Jeremy Taggart, good morning to you and your family. How are you, bud?
I'm glorious. Sunny. It's a little chilly here. How cold is it there?
Why, it's mild.
Really?
And I won't bore you with the details, but suffice to say, summer's hanging on.
Really? You actually have a little clinger of the warmth.
Well, we're building a barn, and suffice to say that the ground is still so moist because of the rain that we've had that the trucks delivering stuff are getting stuck. Just to give you an indication of how unhard the ground is.
Your life, we were talking about on the Jay and Dan podcast that last week I mentioned your trip to Nunavut and the Peter Zosky tournament there.
Sure.
And I did also mention the Athabasca guy and the feeling up of the sister incident. And Jay approved 100%. He appreciated it. And he does want to probably talk to you about it further in a humorous, fun sense. So it was good that we brought it up.
Did he have any guesses as to who the guy might be?
No, but he was going to ask his sister because this probably wouldn't be too hard to narrow down in the high school. But we were talking about how Canadian, or I guess the Canadianity involved in that trip, the fact that you went up there, Peter Zosky, Barney Bentall coming down, going to Edmonton, catching a game.
Oh, yeah, it's heavy.
In Athabasca, just such a heavy duty Canadianity.
Yeah.
And
they
just appreciated the fact that you're like to the bone and like you have that full on Canadianity lifestyle. Hustling.
Big time. And I lived in the States, as you know, as you did as well. And ever since I've been back, the things that I used to find not embarrassing, but a little, you know, cliche about us, I fully embrace. And it was always such a kick leaving Los Angeles and going to LAX and finding yourself in the Air Canada lineup to get on a plane. Because there'd always be someone in front of you who would be talking to their family member and say, like, I brought two blueberry scones and a cranberry muffin. And you'd be like, oh, I'm home. Even like the magazine, En Route magazine on Air Canada, like all that Canadian-ness, because America's very, very different.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And those guys, I'm sure, notice it when they come back to the Canada, too. Because really, there's nothing better, bud.
For sure, there's nothing better. So we can talk about it. I was sitting last night, speaking of Canadianity and people that are living down in America, I was watching SNL last night, and I saw Jim Carrey was hosting.
That might be the perfect segue.
It was.
That might be the perfectly executed segue.
Well, thank you. And I'm actually
You just landed a triple.
I'm on a segue right now in my house.
Oh, my gosh. That's like so meta.
Like Paul Allen.
That's so weird.
Cruising around the house.
So what are the odds?
I don't know. But so I'm watching the episode, and it, you know, I'm a Jim Carrey fan. He's made some classic films. He was probably the funniest man on the planet at one point, which is a pretty difficult thing to achieve. But anyway, he was as funny as he can be, but you could see the strain of the hierarchy and the writing process of that show was weird because, like, there were elements where you could tell he was being himself and the chance to be funny, but then some of the stuff was so poorly written that it's just there was no chance of anybody to be funny. And there was a couple things he did, those Lincoln ads that Matthew McConaughey did. He lampooned that. That was probably the highlight.
Very deserving.
The whole night. But other than that, there wasn't really much there for humor. Have you seen SNL a lot? This is the new season.
I've watched it a little bit, what I can stomach. I mean, in the writer's defense, if you have a guy like Jim Carrey coming in, it's both a blessing and a curse because you have a blank canvas and he can do anything. But at the same time, that's so broad that it's hard to actually nail down what he'd be comfortable doing, what kind of thing he might like to do. Like, they don't, I gather they don't really get to meet these guys till a few days before the show, of course.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get a read on somebody, get what they'd be into, and then execute that in such a short amount of time.
Well, put it this way, it was funnier with him and someone like Bill Hader a couple weeks ago with Kristen Wiig. Like, having, when they have talent, it's funnier. When they don't, it's not as funny. And I think that's what I mean, is when the way the sketches are prepared and how they come out, it's just, they're kind of funny and they really drop off after midnight how bad they get. And you can tell, it's just kind of, there are a lot of funny people in that cast, but they're just not really being used. There's just some weird, organization going on. I don't know what it is, but it's just, it ain't funny. That's a problem.
Well, they've had a mass exodus in the last couple of years, and I've been thinking about it a lot lately. I think my all-time two favorite cast members, and this is a big statement, but as far as what the show is about, which is sketches and impressions and original characters, I think Bill Hader and Kristen Wiig might be my two favorite cast members ever.
Really?
Yeah. And I know that's saying a lot, because I was a huge Phil Hartman fan, and obviously Mike Myers when he was kind of in his peak there, even Dana Carvey, guys like that.
How do you forget about Bill Murray, though?
See, that was a little before my time.
Oh,
I love Bill Murray as an actor, and I've watched the old episodes, but they feel like a little before my time. And I guess a big part of the kick in the 70s was this had never been done before, and it was brand new territory, and you really got the sense they were flying by the seat of their pants. I think when you watch those old episodes to a degree, it's hard to feel that.
No, I just, some of those old, like, to me, they're so simple how funny the old ones are, because they're relying on either the kind of improv of the character. You don't see them looking at the cards as much in the old ones, you know.
Right.
You see them kind of in
the character. Boy, you sure see that now.
Yeah, you see them only doing that. So just, there's more, I guess, either acceptance of the character, and or I guess they allowed them, or they were just that dialed that they didn't necessarily need the full script in front of their face to be able to pull off the sketch. So that just, to me, screams professionalism. You know,
I guess my argument, in a way, Kristen Wiig and Bill Hader are old school in a way, then, because Hader doesn't have to do anything. Like, have you seen What's Up With That?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, so all Lindsay Hader, Buckingham?
He's just playing Lindsay Buckingham. He's just sitting there, and all he does is point and wink to the camera and steals the sketch.
Well,
like, as a utility guy with a big bag of tricks, he's got to be in the conversation for best guy of all time.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I especially kind of like that he's a little understated.
Well,
but his Keith Morrison Dateline impression, unreal.
I think that Taram Kalam, whatever the hell his name, he's funny. Like, he's, but, and that other guy who plays, the new guy who plays the baby, that guy's funny. That kid they got, the 20-year-old, I've seen some of his live stand-up. He seems to be funny.
Does, like, he?
There are people that are on there that are definitely hilarious people. It's just, there's something going on in the way that the recipe of the show is just being screwed up.
I don't think you get there without being funny, by the way. Like, Mark McKinney is an incredible sketch performer. He'd probably be the first to tell you that environment wasn't one in which he could thrive, because I think it's really cutthroat and competitive. But as far as, like, solid sketch performers, Mark McKinney's incredible, and obviously had the pedigree.
Yeah.
So getting there, I guess, isn't enough. Although I heard one of the writers interviewed this week who said it's a very democratic process, because they read the sketches, the funny ones make it into the dress, and then the ones that play the best at dress rehearsal are the ones that make it in the show. So in a way, they're deferring to the audience at the dress rehearsal and basing what makes it in the show on their laughs.
That's what it, yeah, I know, but you'd think that works, but that doesn't, when I watch the show, that's not what I feel. It feels like there's, like, this guy's sketch always gets out there, and this one, like, there was an element of that with when Tina Fey was the head writer, that it always had to be the Tina Fey skits for the first 30 minutes, and then that, it kind of went from there. And some of the ones that were in the second hour were hilarious. You know, I remember some of the Tracy Morgan stuff that he came up with in the earlier, like when he was first on there, was just like spectacular, but you wouldn't see it until like 12:45 or something like that.
Oh,
but
man.
Just because of that hierarchy of like, no, this is just kind of how it has to be, and it's more about awareness and who sees the, who they need to know who it is doing the sketch. It's not necessarily as important as how funny it is, but remember he was doing that what the heck was the guy who saw the goat eyes, or
oh yeah, that's so weird.
I'm someone Allen or something. Bob Allen, that goats have devil eyes.
My friend was sitting in Third Street Promenade in Santa Monica, and Farley, Sandler, Spade, and Chris Rock came in and sat at the table behind her.
No way.
Like, just after they'd been on SNL for a few years, they're kind of at the height of their fame on that show. And she said, I just put down my sandwich and listened and tried to stifle my laughter for the whole thing. If you could eavesdrop on one table, that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely, because it's all like no holds barred, and they're all just trying to entertain each other, just working. That must have been insanity.
I mean, Spade's kind of, it's a weird thing. It's like Wes Anderson makes a movie like Rushmore, and it's incredible. And then the next few movies he makes, he gets accused of doing Wes Anderson. David Spade is kind of doing David Spade at this point in his career, right?
Well, I've never really thought him to be that funny anyway. He was just kind of the straight guy that allowed everybody else to be funny around him. And I remember even seeing him in L.A. He'd just be that guy just sitting there at the Rainbow Bar, you know, by himself with a hat on, just trying to meet chicks or whatever else, just kind of straighten it out straight on right into the sunset.
Do you want to hear a great Spade story? He took a friend of mine out on a date.
Yeah.
And she said, what are we going to do? And he said, well, we're going to go see Big Mama's House 2.
Whoa.
He was like, Big Mama's House 2? Why? That's our date? So he calls ahead. He has an in with whatever, the theater at the Grove, the outdoor theater.
Yeah.
Or outdoor mall. And he always likes to sit in the back row by the wheelchair seats. And they have special fold-down chairs for him. Because I guess, I don't know, his legs don't reach the ground on regular seats or something.
Oh my God.
So they take their seats in the dark, and the first trailer that comes up was a trailer for the new David Spade movie.
Oh man. They had to be there early, eh?
Yeah. The reason he wanted to take her to Big Mama's House too was because he called and asked in which movie the trailer for his new movie would be playing.
So that was it.
That was it.
How was the date?
There was no hammer time. That was it.
Did he make any movage?
No, he didn't get a second look.
I know, but the hands might have had a chance.
I don't think so. Really? It's not really little fold down card table chairs aren't really conducive to, you know, the electric shift.
Was there at least a sound?
I don't know. when I retell it from now on, there will be.
Do you have any Jim Carrey stories?
Oh, man. This is the weirdest story I know.
Come on. You got one?
Yeah. So the legend goes, on the way back from the Tomcat wedding, when Tom Cruise married Katie Holmes at this castle in Italy, Jim Carrey gets the idea that he wants to beat the wedding. Because that had like... You know, I don't know if it was Bennifer at the time and some Beckhamses and some Will and Jada Smithses, like everyone in the world was there.
Yeah.
And it was at a castle and it was a big deal. So Jim Carrey decides he wants to usurp that wedding and make it look stupid by throwing a party that's so big by comparison that no one will even remember the wedding. So he rents two studios at Warner Brothers in Los Angeles, turns one into an indoor winter wonderland. This is California in December. An ice skating rink. There are actual reindeer. There's an In-N-Out truck. and turns the other one into, you know, HIPAA beef, who wants more Range Rovers, like the most garish, obnoxious display of money you've ever heard. So I, for reasons, again, I won't bore you with, I was there.
Nice.
By total fluke, friend of a friend, invited through distant relations, whatever.
Yep.
You pull up into an actual snowstorm that they've created with actual snow machines, where a choir of 1800s little people is caroling.
Oh my God. What the heck was
the only thing was you had to bring a piece of plastic to give to, in quotes, the poor people. And you couldn't help but think, looking around, that if they just donated the money it took to throw this party to the poor people, poverty itself would have been fixed. So there's this tiny plastic mountain in the distance where everyone's put their, you know, bonkers board games or whatever. Morgan Freeman was there. It was the year March of the Penguins came out. And I was actually standing behind him when Jim introduces real penguins. Like, ladies and gentlemen, I flew in some penguins. And these penguins kind of toddle out onto the ice. And Morgan Freeman was all banged up standing in front of me. And I was just hoping he was going to turn around and say, "They are birds but cannot fly." Because it was the year March of the Penguins was everywhere. But there was this tension hanging in the air because all this party was for naught if Tom Cruise didn't show up.
Oh my God.
So it's getting late in the afternoon and there's no Tom Cruise and people have kind of forced smiles on their face and nobody's really digging it. Suddenly, a murmur goes through the room that Tom Cruise is there and he was with Katie and his mom. So Tom Cruise is on skates and Katie Holmes is in flat shoes and she's still a full head taller than him.
Oh my God.
Tom's mom puts on skates.
Is he doing the butter skates or what? How's he skating?
Amazingly.
No!
Yeah, as you might imagine, like completely professionally. So Tom Cruise's mom puts skates on and she's skating around and they're playing Christmas carols and everyone's having HIPAA beef and it's fun. And then suddenly, Tom Cruise's mom falls on the ice and hits her head and it starts to bleed.
No!
And the carols are turned off, and all you hear is Tom Cruise expertly skating from one end of the rink to the other, gets down on all knees, Footloose styles, and slides to his mom, taking his jacket off and tucking it under her head all in one motion. And like he Mission Impossible'd her. Yeah, it was like a stunt.
He was like at the other end when she fell and just.
But the crazy thing is, even in that room with like Sasha Cohen, the figure skater was there and like all these folks that you've heard of.
Yeah.
Even in that room, when Tom Cruise walks in, the air changes and everyone becomes a giggly, cloying high school idiot. Hi, Tom.
Did he almost like stop, like get the coat under her head before it hit the ground?
Oh yeah, it was amazing. It was like a dance move. It was like Stars on Ice. So she was okay. She was whisked away, and the party was validated by his very presence.
Man, that's crazy.
But I'm going to tell you something. You could see in Katie Holmes's face that she was trapped.
Wow,
it's weird.
Was there like just a feeling of like the Men in Black around them, like the Scientology crew?
Oh yeah. Like Convoy of Suburban, like it's that.
Wow.
And the Scientology thing.
What a trip.
And they apparently interviewed 5 actresses to be his lady.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Sofia Vergara was one of them, but she was too hot to handle. She was too caliente for the Scientology community. Allegedly, yep. Lindsay Lohan was another one. And they went for Katie Holmes because she's kind of vanilla.
And I've heard stories, and not like I've heard stories of stories. I've heard stories like I've heard stories about that. Let's take a break and then talk about Jim Carrey and play a game about Jim Carrey.
I love it. Hang on.
Where's my beer chair?
And we're back on TNT. Hey, how are you, Jonathan?
I'm great. Did you ever see the Jimmy Fallon, and we're back, radio DJ character that he played?
No, I didn't.
He's got Jimmy Fallon... he laughed a lot at his own stuff and other people on SNL, but I thought he was really funny and likable and watchable on SNL. And then when he left SNL for this film career, he jumped too soon. And yeah. I remember reading that Rolling Stone article where he really saw himself as a romantic comedy leading man, and he couldn't understand for the life of him why people didn't want to watch he and Queen Latifah in Taxi or whatever that was called. The Taxi was really depressing. And it's kind of the same conversation that I find myself in about Jim Carrey some of the time. The first 8 minutes of the first Ace Ventura, I was like, what the hell is happening? I don't even understand. And then he's so relentless and so committed that he totally wins you over. And as a physical comedian, he's amazing. But he's not satisfied being a physical comedian. He wants to be taken seriously as a dramatic actor. And it's the whole sad clown thing. And I think Jimmy Fallon got back on track once he realized it's okay to just be this silly, light, funny guy. And that worked out great for him.
Yeah, no, that's a hard hat to give up, I think, once they want. It's that whole thing. Like, I personally accept a great comedic actor the same as a dramatic actor, because it's a character that you have to convey, and you're selling that person to people, and you're in that character to the point where you forget about the script, and it's very hard to do, and it should be accepted in the same realm, because some of the great comedic performances of all time are no reason why they shouldn't be, you know, accepted on the same level as a Raging Bull or a Godfather, because they're just so involved in that character, like a Peter Sellers, or even when Jim Carrey would do certain things, it's so far removed from what we normally see from a person, yet he is in that and accepting in that character, so why not be so valid? But sure, I think it's the stigma that a lot of actors in comedy have, is that they want to be accepted as a dramatic actor, like it's,
or
it's
as something they're not. Like, I think I was saying this a couple of weeks ago, like people love Jim Carrey doing that physical comedy stuff. It's like a one-hit wonder, I guess. People want you to play that song over and over again, and I understand the urge to want to do something different, but it's also that thing that made you famous and made people adore you, you know?
Yeah. No, for sure.
In the not staying in their lane category comes this breaking news. Dukes of Hazzard co-stars John Schneider and Tom Wopat record a jazzy Christmas album.
What?
Who wants to listen to that? And the subhead is good
what is going on here?
Trade Tom jokes, harmonies on jazz-influenced project.
Oh, man. Tom Wopat. Why are they together? I thought Tom Wopat did okay in country on his own.
I don't know. Well, now they're in jazz.
Yeah,
hey, Tom? Yeah. This, John Schneider, how you doing, bud? Good, bud. What are you, how you doing?
Just thinking about maybe doing some music again.
Be right but, over. I'll be right over.
Not just country, but maybe some jazz.
Remember, we always talked about that.
Hey, remember when we'd be down on the set and you just couldn't really feel right until we put on some Freddy Freeloader by Miles Davis?
Brutal. It's just ill-conceived. It's a bad idea. It's like the, have we talked about David Hasselhoff and 9/11? Do you know that story?
What?
It's so good.
David Hasselhoff and 9/11.
Yeah, I know. That's the headline.
Tell me.
So David Hasselhoff is huge in Germany as a singer, as you know. He's a pop singer. People love him. And all he's ever wanted is to be taken seriously in North America. So several years ago, he takes, I think it was $40 million of his own money and places it on a pay-per-view special to be aired in North America that's going to make him a household name and once and for all get his name taken seriously as a musician. The date was booked for September 11th, 2001.
Yeah.
20 people watched. He lost his shirt, so to speak, and that was it. Everyone was glued to CNN. Never could have seen that coming.
You can do that? You just bankroll yourself, like buy ABC?
Yeah, that's what he did. Because no one else would bankroll it. Next thing you know, like, you're face down eating cheeseburgers on the floor.
Ross Perot styles?
That's what happened to him.
Wow, just buying the time and just people not, obviously, just gone.
Yeah. So
even if he had an empty, like, full on normal night, like, what the hell was he thinking?
Bud, just take the 40 milsy and put it in the bank.
Just and put don't up answer some the billboards. Phone. Make your own community, like.
Like, David make a Hasselhoff. Living as a David Hasselhoff lookalike and fool everybody.
Wow.
So in the spirit of people who aren't what they seem on the surface, because Jim Carrey's one of those guys, maybe falls into the sad clown category, and I'm sure his upbringing had something to do with it, because as the legend goes, I think he went camping with his family one summer and realized about November that they lived in their car.
Like, yeah, that was it.
Was not easy times for him. So I get that there are some demons and some darkness there. But we thought we'd play a game called Carry, Don't Carry. Or is it Carry, Not Carry?
Carry or Don't Carry.
Okay.
Because you don't carry.
Right, you I don't like carry.
Yeah.
So Carry or Don't Carry. And the idea is one of us will read a quote and the other has to guess if it's Jim Carrey or someone else with Carrey in their name. Could be Carey Price, could be Drew Carey, could be Mariah Carey.
I love this. This is perfect. Can we take a quick break and then come right on it?
Yeah, let's take a break and then we'll get right into it.
Cocktail, please.
And we're back.
Just to remind the people, the reason that we take breaks sometimes on the show is because I'm in Nova Scotia, Jeremy's in Ontario, and we have to upload these segments of the show so that our friend Tim, who's in the rock combo, the Arkells, can cobble them together.
Who are having some great success, the Arkells.
Unbelievable.
They took home a CASBY here in Toronto, which is Edge 102.1, a radio station, which is a little awards show they have every year. They took home Best Album, which is great.
It's a really big deal, and I feel in a way like we don't give Tim enough props, both for what he does on the podcast and with the Arkells.
Yes, and he is...
Because they're on the way, right? They're doing really well in... all like a lot of different countries.
Yes, they have some success in Germany. They've been to the UK with some success. They're down in the States doing well in some markets down there as well. So yeah, I mean, it's doesn't get much better for a band these days with the difficulty of how it is to become popular.
Heady times.
They're about as big as you can be, you know, for a band on the radio and all that stuff in Canada. It's amazing.
Great.
Anyway.
At the risk of asking a junior high, I'm doing a project question. What advice would you give the Tims of the world or young you when you guys started to make it happen? What would it be?
Well, for one thing, Tim is a great example of how you should be is you kind of sponge things. You listen. I don't know. He's got the way that Tim did it I knew him since he was 15. So he was just kind of around and hanging out, and I knew his family, and he just figured out and learned the right things. He got involved with music on the right length. He went to school for recording and figured out all the engineering stuff, and just kind of has some trade involved with his musical ability. And I guess that's kind of the smartest way to look at it. You have to kind of look at it as a trade and try and supplement yourself with the proper tools to give yourself a chance to make a couple of bucks, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So what is the smartest thing you can do if you suddenly find yourself in a position where you're starting to make it?
Yeah, well,
do you wish you had stashed money away or...
No, I think...
harder?
Well, stashing money away is always smart because you always think it's going to keep coming when it starts coming, you know? But more important is to stay creative and stay nourished by, you know, working and doing stuff that you like to do. Because if that maintains that, if you can maintain the creative freedom and enjoying the fact that you're playing and making music, then that's the ultimate. That's what you can. I mean, that's what we're trying to do on Earth. You know,
so that
means getting good at your instrument too. Like just really. Working hard on the performance and the idea of getting technically able, right?
Who is the bass player in Bon Jovi who is a friend of theirs from childhood? And I think it was Richie Sambora who said they had to kick him out of the band. And he said the first few times he messed up in front of a stadium full of people, we felt really bad for him. The next 100 times, we felt bad for us.
Yeah, no. And that must get
brutal when one guy in the band's not pulling their weight.
I remember it got to the point where I heard stories where Bon Jovi, John himself, would be like, make sure that guy's off live. Like, you can't hear him. So I think they did a lot of the keyboard stuff, took care of the bass.
Wow.
And but I heard the craziest stories about that, and from somebody, I can't say who, but like, apparently that bass player felt so isolated towards the end that he was like infiltrating, like in like recording conversations and trying to like,
oh my god, you know,
get stuff on guys because he knew he was about to go out, to the point where I think one ridiculous thing where he was like on a ledge at an apartment or at a hotel, like outside the window on a ledge at one point, to try and get some info.
It's like Jay Leno in a closet during Warren Littlefield's NBC meetings to decide who gets the Tonight Show.
Yeah, like hiding in the closet. But imagine being outside on the building on a ledge by the window.
That's like a Leslie Nielsen movie.
Yeah, just to check out what John Bond's saying to the other guys. Oh, man, imagine him crying with big hair sitting there on the ledge. It's over, man.
My friend Suresh told me, because he auditioned for a musical and he sang Blaze of Glory. He told me that the producers of Blaze of Glory wanted to license Dead or Alive. And Bon Jovi, in his infinite wisdom, said, that song is about a rock band. Let me write you a song about cowboys. And that's where Blaze of Glory came from.
Yeah.
He wouldn't let them license Dead or Alive.
Yeah, no, I'll give you a cowboy song on my own dime, and you pay me double.
He's smart, that Bon Jovi.
Yep.
And a terrible actor.
Terrible actor, great singer, would sell his grandmother for a hit song.
He sure would.
Yeah.
That's a great introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, he'd sell his grandmother for a hit song. Please welcome John Bon Jovi. Nobody has hosted better than Chris Rock at the MTV Movie Awards.
No, for sure. No.
Oh, my God. Remember?
Oh, man. Yeah, no, he was just...
Please welcome the rich man, Skeet Ulrich, Johnny Depp. So funny.
Hey, are we going to play Carrie or Don't Care?
Yes, we are. I think it should be Carrie or Not Carrie, because you're either saying Jim Carrey said that or it's not Jim Carrey.
Okay, I just...
We don't carry about any of it.
Don't carry is funny, though.
It is funny. Yeah. So we don't carry who said it, but the game is carry or not carry.
Yes, that's right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, that's sure. And you want to start, or would you like me to start?
Why don't we shoot for it verbally?
Okay.
You say rock, paper, or scissors. Okay. It's 1, 2, 3, go, and we'll shoot for it. You ready?
Yeah.
1, 2, 3.
Paper.
Scissors. Okay, I'm going first. Or did I just win the choice?
That's
in which
thing.
Case
you
I would choose
choice.
If you go first.
You
go
want?
First then.
What do you want?
I want you to go first.
I'm going first then.
Okay,
hang on. Getting you all set up. Carry or not carry?
Yeah.
You ready for this?
I am. And could this, just so I know, could this be a line of dialogue, or this is interview clips, or what is this?
These are quotes.
Okay.
Okay?
Yeah.
Resentment is like drinking poison and waiting for the other person to die. Carry or not carry?
Carry.
That's not Carrie. This is Carrie Fisher.
Really?
Yes.
Good one.
Yeah, I like that. That was a good one.
That's a really good one.
It is.
I thought like his dime store psychologist kind of thing that sounded like something he might say. All right, here comes one.
This game is tough. We're not throwing.
I know. These aren't big marshmallows.
No. Yeah. Okay. Let's go. You give me one.
All right. Jam this in your word holes. Vegas is everything that's right with America. You can do whatever you want 24 hours a day. They've effectively legalized everything there. Carry or not carry?
I'm going to say not carry.
Correct. For a bonus point, which carry-related person said that? Vegas is everything that's right with America. You can do whatever you want 24 hours a day. They've effectively legalized everything there.
So we're thinking possible person living there. Or that
boop-ba,
maybe that does works there. Boop-ba. Successful comedian. Drew Carey?
Oh, you're talking that out. Attaboy. Absolutely. That was Drew Carey.
Nice.
I got offered hosting The Price is Right live in Atlantic City.
Very good.
And said no. But what they do is have Price is Right live, like with the wheel and everything. And it happens like every 2 hours all day at the casino. It's kind of awesome and kind of sounds like hell.
Yeah, definitely that does, for sure.
I didn't do it. All right, hit me.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
They capitalized on a couple opportunities right at the start of the second period. And that was a tough hole to dig out of. We're going to stay positive. The series is not over yet. We're going home, and we're going to bring our absolute best. Carry or not carry?
It's got to be Carey Price.
Yes. Nice one.
Oh, wicked.
2 points for you.
Whew. Very okay.
Good. Very good.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully it's not a freight train. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully it's not a freight train. Carey or not Carey?
I'm going to say Carey.
I'm going to say not Carey.
Ooh, it's not Carey.
Let me read another quote by this person and see if you can figure out who it is, because this quote is astonishing.
Okay.
Whenever I watch TV and see those poor starving kids all over the world, I can't help but cry. I mean, I'd love to be skinny like that, but not with all those flies and death and stuff.
Oh, wow. I think I've heard that, is that Mariah Carey?
Yes, it is.
Oh, yeah.
You got a twofer, bot.
Woo. Nice.
Isn't that shocking?
Yeah, that is a elitist quote if I've ever heard.
What a heinous thing to say.
That's too much.
I didn't ever, never got Mariah Carey. Like, I get with the 5-octave range, that's impressive, but it's not my thing.
Wow, man, that is unbelievable. That is really bad.
Yeah. All Oof. Right, hit me.
Okay. That's the trouble with being me. At this point, nobody gives a damn what my problem is. I could literally have a tumor on the side of my head and they'd be like, yeah, big deal. I'd eat a tumor every morning for the kind of money you're pulling down. Carey or not Carey?
It's Carey. There's no question.
Yes.
Carey.
You got it. You know you're Jimby.
What's wrong with him?
What's wrong with Jim?
Yeah, why is he so sad?
I think it's the, like you said, the clown thing where, you know, he was always that class clown as a kid. He was poor growing up. I can relate to some of that.
Sure.
You become insecure when you don't have a lot of security around you as a kid, you know, monetarily and financially. So
I guess it depends where you grow up. If you grow up with not much around a bunch of folks that have a lot,
yeah,
then it could be that way. But out in the East Coast, a lot of folks didn't have a lot, and that was just your life.
Yeah, and that's the thing. A lot of people, if you have a lot of love in the house, which I did, is that makes everything all the difference for sure. I mean, there could be down times, but you need to have the upside. So
I always think that when you hear folks who are thinking of sticking together for the kids, all kids want to know is they're loved, you know, and if they have two happy households, that's better than one tense one, I always say.
Yeah, and he's kind of been a bit of a skipping stone in terms of a father figure, so it's hard to say whether he's had a lot of love from the get-go.
He's a grandfather now.
Wow. Unreal.
Okay, here's one. My focus is to forget the pain of life. Forget the pain, mock the pain, reduce it, and laugh.
Not Carey.
Carey.
Whoa, yeah, that was a good one.
Carey.
There's another one of the sad sackers.
Sad sacker.
Yeah.
All right, hit me with your last one. Or was that it?
I think I gave you my 3, bud.
Yikes.
That was that exciting and that perpetually amazing.
Kind of downer city doing the Carey thing, but you often hear that, like, I don't know how happy a guy Mike Myers is.
Yeah, how about that? But I mean, I'm not as big a fan as Mike Myers as Jim Carrey. It's just that never really thought he was that physically entertaining, or even the jokes. Like I saw Wayne's World again a few weeks ago with the kids, and it was just kind of like some sad.
Didn't
jokes.
Hold up.
Just not funny at all. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if he just got lucky in the time and the people that were on SNL around him, and his relationship with Lorne Michaels, or what it was, but weird.
I sure liked So I Married an Axe Murderer.
That was a great film, yes. Very.
And fun. I liked Philip, the kid who ate too much chocolate and was tied to the playground thing.
I don't remember even know him? If I saw
he was
that.
He was an SNL character. And Simon in the tub. Oh,
yeah,
no,
I remember
rings.
That. Yeah. There were some moments, for sure.
Let's take a break on TNT. We'll be right back.
Let me ask you this right quick. You know what I mean?
And we're back again. Hey!
That's Mariah Carey, right?
Yeah, but it has some Eastern soul.
Some Eastern soul?
Yeah.
Yeah. What name a Mariah Carey song? Let's see who can go the furthest. Go the longest. Go the distance.
Someday.
Okay.
Your turn.
Heartbreaker.
Ooh. I don't even know anymore.
I don't even know anymore either.
That's a hard game to play.
One each.
One each, I guess. There was also a tie. Na, 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 na. That sounds like every other one, though.
Want to be my baby? Because you want to be my baby. But I don't know what it was called.
I'm sure if you said my baby was or my baby is, that's a real one.
Yeah.
I got a story about awesome.
Hit me.
Because sometimes things are awesome. People say, what's awesome? Do you know when awesome, the word, became popular at all? Can you even think in your head, like, the first time you heard the word awesome?
I think I saw it on a t-shirt. My sister was 12, and she's trying to convince my mother to buy her a t-shirt that said, my body is an outlaw. It's wanted all over town. And she didn't understand why that wasn't really appropriate, but I remember there was a t-shirt in the window beside it that said awesome.
Yeah. That's it. So I'm assuming it has to be, like, popularized, at least in Canada, maybe early 80s, late 70s, I'm not sure, but I think it was in, I was in Mansfield at the time.
You were in what?
In Mansfield, which is a town just north of Ontario.
Yeah.
Or north of Toronto, sorry, about an hour. And my brother's friend was over, and they were talking about this area in a wood, you know, we're in Mansfield, it's a small spot with lots of woods and rivers and great places to hang out as a kid. Very Huckleberry Finn.
Beautiful.
So, James, my brother, is telling him, he's like, oh yeah, man, we got to go to this place. It's awesome. Down in the middle of the woods, there's rivers and all kinds of like frogs and stuff. We got to go. It's going to be awesome. And then the kid goes to his mom and he's like, Ma, can I go to awesome? and the mom is like, what, where's awesome? And he's like, it's awesome. It's just over in the woods. And the mother was like upset because it sounded like scary and like youthful in a sense. Like, aww, what's awesome? Where is this place? And how come I don't know about it? And kind of getting upset about the concept of what it is. And how come the kids know and I don't know what it is?
Aww.
Just caused this kind of ridiculous scene, and you know, from that, it's just legendary to this point.
It should be renamed Awesome.
Yeah, well, just to think like that's a place, and then have the whole family get all up in arms about it, just because it sounds like rock and roll in 1956 or something like
that. I love stories like that. Like you see Round To It Road, that people think will come up with a name when we get around to it. There's a town in Colorado called No Name Colorado, because when they were putting together the maps for the place, everybody had to write down what the name of their town was and submit it to whatever, the map organization. And this one town didn't have a name, and so it went to print as No Name.
Nice.
That's what it's called.
That's sad.
Sad, but kind of beautiful in a way.
No Name. It's just like you got, you know, when you buy the product, it's like, yeah, it tastes the same, but just
names are interesting though.
Character.
I just as I've told you, not on the podcast, I just bought a fleet of trailers and trucks to rent out on movies. I'm going to try this little side business.
Yeah.
So I'm in the trucking business now, and I'm suddenly, some of the trucks are doing more than they should be doing. Others are doing less than they can do. So I'm trying to line up the perfect fleet. So I'm having chassis elongated and boxes built and all this stuff.
But when how's this process been of like learning about like this? This came from, I'm going to do this. And then now you're in it. Is it different from the initial concept in your mind?
No, it's kind of what I thought it would be, but there are so many different aspects to it. Like, and fortunately, my father-in-law is able to help me with all this stuff, but like, I have, I don't know, 20 batteries that I have to take out for the winter and make sure they're charged regularly. And the interesting thing about these vehicles is, unlike most big rigs, when they're driving on the highway, they might reach a million miles and then kind of need to be retired. These vehicles require maintenance from sitting around, because you might drive it to a studio and they sit there for 6 months. So the tires don't, the treads don't wear out. The tires just crack from being old and sitting there.
Wow.
So it's that stuff. So just, the name has to be something that reflects what it is and what it does, but without being too clever and without being too much of a, sorry, can you repeat that? So I was thinking trailers parked boy. And then I was like, that's too cutesy.
Yeah.
Especially if I want it to be around for a long time and then, you know, the show's not known anymore in 20 years and this company lives on.
I don't know if that's possible, but...
What also requires a... Sorry, what? Oh, no, it's trailers parked, boy. You also have to say it so slowly so people get it.
Yeah.
So here's what I decided, man. You ready?
Oh, no, you got it.
Yeah, I got a name. I have a name. I have a logo and everything.
Let's hear it.
Rolling. Whoa. Rolling. productionrentals.com.
Go again.
Rollingproductionrentals.com. It's rolling as in the trucks are rolling, but also rolling as in the cameras rolling, because they're production rentals. And wait for it, the R in rolling is like an old-timey movie camera on a tripod.
That is a horny idea and visually logo horny.
Right?
I like it.
I'm now a trucker who dabbles in TV.
Now you can, like, drive the trucks around for fun or, like...
Well, here's the interesting thing. I have this tractor, like a tractor-trailer truck, and it has air brakes. No, it has hydraulic brakes, so I can drive it. If it had the other kind of brakes, I couldn't. But because it has these hydraulic brakes, I can drive it. I don't even need a special license.
So what does this mean? You're going to just like be that guy sometimes? Go on and grab some stuff at Sobeys?
Yeah. Because it's good just to run them around, bud. But it's also a roulette because you don't want to have everybody plated and ready to go if they're just going to be sitting in my yard.
So are you just like, how do you drum up business for this kind of stuff? What do you do?
Well, I'm getting the website ready. And then as soon as it's ready, I'll hit a, hey, everybody I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
Doing this business now. Please tell everyone you've ever met in your life. So the final touches are being put on the website. If you ever want to come out and drive a big rig, bud.
I want to come out and drive a big rig. We should do a TNT from the rig.
It's a pretty intoxicating feeling. We should do our first ever video TNT installment with you learning to drive a big rig around my field.
That would be awesome. I want to do that.
I want to do it too. All we need is some points. For you to come out.
Some points.
Yeah, some points. We just need some Aeroplan points.
I got some points.
And come on out.
I got a few.
And come on out.
All right.
Good to talk to you as always, bud.
Always good to talk to you, Jonathan.
And I look forward to the next time we get to do this, which will be our 20th anniversary episode. I've been pushing for our greatest hits, and maybe that's something we'll look at. We should also share with people the good news that, though we haven't done it yet, we've inquired as to the steps to get on iTunes, so it's actually coming.
Yes,
thanks for your patience. Thanks for listening and bear with us.
We are going to get on iTunes and stop. We're sorry for being such slackers.
That's going to open up a whole new world with new horizons.
Fandangled. Isn't there is fandangled one of the words in there?
No, isn't that? We've set the life and angle. Cartwheels cross the floor. What song is that?
I don't know.
Whiter Shade of Pale.
It was like, oh, that's, yeah. That's, yeah.
I was feeling kind of. What does that even mean?
Yeah. I played in a cover band when I was 15 with like a 55-year-old guy who sang that in the set. And we were one time at his house. Like, this is ridiculous that I was in this band with like 50-year-olds doing covers when I was 15. But like one rehearsal, they didn't have any gear, but he had just like this little tiny like kid's keyboard on his lap. And we were doing these ridiculous songs and he's like singing with this little keyboard.
Skip the light and let go.
And then I think he started getting creeped out that I was too young. Because I think I initially said I was like 18, and then he thought it was like, I don't like this kid hanging out. So then I think I called like a couple weeks later, and it's like, he's like, his kid answers, and he's like, I can hear him from the shower. He's like, tell him I'm on tour in Calgary.
No.
Yeah, I got the brush.
You got kicked out. What was it called? Do you remember?
The band?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. It was just this like older guy with like a cover band. That's all they did was like, and I kind of like snuck my way in, but he got to the point where he had to like shut me down because I was.
You were kicked out. Just like Rick Kay and the All-Nighters. You were showing off. How much did that hurt as a kid when someone said, Jeremy, you're showing off?
Tell him I'm in Calgary from the shower.
Oh my gosh.
He's in Calgary now for a week.
Did you say? I actually just heard him in the shower.
No, I was just like, whatever, man. I get it. It's over. It's all set. Really don't care. I'll find a younger guy to play Whiter Shade of Pale.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I think it was because I was in another band that did a lot of like REM songs at the time.
Also good.
He didn't want anything to do with that music.
Do you want to hear? This is the most pressure I've ever felt in my life.
I'm not doing no REM, kid.
Oh, he didn't want to do it. He's
like Bob Seger turned the page into this is the end of the world.
Did he? Did he really play Turn the Page?
Oh, for sure.
Here like I go.
Like big hair and beard and like that look, like a 70s rocker. He's like, well, you don't want to hear about no college rock.
REM. He wasn't doing that. Especially.
No way.
Especially because you would have had to do the backups in Shiny Happy People.
Tell that guy I'm in Calgary.
Most pressure I've ever felt in my life was in 1978 when I was at the UPEI summer music camp and I was 6. And you had to be 12 to get in. But they let me in because I'd been studying classical guitar for a couple of years. Because most of the kids were teenagers and wanted to, you know, get frisky at the nightly dances, I was made the DJ. And the teachers would say, you have time for one more slow dance before the dance is over. And they'd put on Let It Be. And as it would get close to the end, they'd be saying to me, put it back to the start. And I was like, no, that's not fair. Put it back to the start.
No way, skipping it.
These frisky 15-year-olds. Telling me to put it back to the start. But I wouldn't do it. I stood my ground.
No way.
Yeah.
I remember one time in an apartment, like with I don't remember who it was, but they were really banged up in LA. We were playing this Captain Beefheart record, and I kept skipping it, like, because there was like a break in the song where it, like, you could easily start it again and it would sound similar because there would be like 3 verses in a row that were similar.
And you're just playing it over and over and over again.
So I swear to God, the song was on for like 45 minutes before the guy was like, hey man, this song's, what's going on here?
Captain Beefheart? I don't even know what that is.
Because it's Captain Beefheart, it's just like really obnoxious and you can't not know that it's on in the background.
It's not like wallpaper.
It's like 45 minutes, and it's like, man, this is long, this song. How could you even have this on an album? Like, if it came that, like, how could you even have an album with this song on it when it's, like, clearly, like, longer than 2 sides of an album? Yeah. I don't know what we're going all over the place here at the last.
I know we're trying to wind her down, and it's just become like a Tarzan vine to vine of stories.
It's great stuff, though.
We better pull the shoe, bud.
We gotta wrap it up. We gotta wrap it up.
Hey, always nice chatting, and book your ticket with those points and get out here and drive a big rig, bud.
Let's do it.
Take care, and I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, see ya.
Fucking right, eh?
With new horizons to